Nazir, Perek Zayin, Mishnah Gimel, 7-3, and the Mishnah picks up where it left off in the previous Mishnah. Whereas in the previous Mishnah had said if the Nazir is exposed to Tumas Meis, corpse Tuma, so then his clock fully resets after he becomes Tahor and does the shaving and brings his Korbanos. In our Mishnah here, we will learn that there's ways in which a person who is a Nazir can become Tumei Meis, exposed to Tuma from a corpse, and require the Tahara process, the 7 days with the sprinkling on the third and seventh day, etc., and yet not need to shave his hair and start his count all over again. So the Mishnah here will enumerate those cases. So the first case here is one of Safik Tuma. The specific words of the Mishnah are Aval, however, in contrast to the previous Mishnah where we said he has to restart, in these cases the din will be he won't have to restart his count, he just picks up where he left off after he comes to Tahor again. So the first case is Hasachachos v'hapuraos. Sachachos are like, you have like branches from a tree or that are spread out, and each one is at least like a tefach wide, so it can convey tuma. Of Tumas Meis as functioning as an ohel, but we're not sure if he was under that particular branch or not when he passed by. And same goes for Paraos, these are kind of like outcroppings of buildings, like, you know, like stones that protrude out from the side of a building. Again, we're not sure whether or not he was actually under the same outcropping or canopy piece as the piece of the corpse itself. And therefore, it's a suffix, we're not sure. And while the rabbis said that he treats himself as being tummy because of this, we're not sure if he's tummy in this situation that happened to play itself out, and therefore he has to be midor rabbanan tummy for 7 days, etc., we don't require him to start his tumma count all over again. Now, an important detail here. The rule is that when one is exposed to tumma in a situation of suffik, maybe he did, maybe he didn't, if that suffik arose in a what's called Rishus HaRabim, which I'll translate that just now as a public place, not Rishus HaRabim in the context of Hilchot Shabbos, but Rishus HaRabim defined as like where there are people. So then the rule is Safek in Rishus HaRabim, so Sveiko Tahor, we paskin him to be Tahor. In contrast, if the question arose in a, I'll call it a private place, there isn't much traffic, so then Sveiko Tame, we rule him to be Tame. So the case of our Mishnah here is that this Nazir passed under the Sechachos or the Paraos in a Rishus HaRabim, in a public place. We don't know for sure if he was under the same outcropping overhang as the mace, the piece of the corpse. So we say that Mida Oraisa, since it's in a Rishus HaRabim, we postulate that he is Tahor. And yet Mida Rabbanan, we require him to go through the purification process before he can resume his count. If this exposure happened in a Rishus HaYachid, since the din is in Suffolk that rises in Rishus HaYachid is ruled to be Tamei, so then our Mishnah would not apply, meaning if the Suffolk occurred in a Rishus HaYachid, so then we would rule Sveiko Tamei, and we would actually require him to start his count again. That's a Dindo Raisa. Okay? That's the first case. The second case is Uves HaPras. If the Nazir is exposed to the Tumah of a Beis HaPras. Beis HaPras is like a field in which there was someone buried, but now the basic case of Beis HaPras is the corpse was there, but the field has been plowed over. And there is a concern, a rabbinic concern, even though it's kind of far out, that perhaps the plowshare grabbed onto the bones and dragged them around the field. Bones have been spread, and now when a person passes through the field, he'll do maga, direct contact, or masa. He'll like kick, move, you know, bear the weight of a bone fragment that's the size of a saora, of a barley corn, which will make him tame with tumas mace. So the rabbi said, if a corpse that was buried in a field that has been plowed over, if we know the location, so we say within 100 amos, whatever that is, 50 meters, of in all directions from where the grave was, we're afraid that maybe bones have been dragged, and therefore midirabbanan, we treat anybody who passes through the Beis HaPras as being tame and requiring tahara the 7 day, the full 7 day process. So here, if we have a nazir pass through the Beis HaPras, even though midirabbanan will treat him as tame and he needs the tahara process, when he does finish becoming tahor again, he can resume his count for nazirus from where he left off. Next is ve'eretz ha'amim. The lands outside of Eretz Yisrael. So here, another Durabanan, the Chazal paskin that in a series of different enactments, actually, that the land outside of Israel should be treated to be tamei, tumas meis, the whole land and the airspace itself even. The fear was that the Gentiles don't pay attention to where they bury their dead, and there could be dead in any which way. And that being the case, anyone who goes to Chutz La'aretz, he's exposed to corpse tuma, and therefore we treat him and treat the land that came from Eretz Ha'am, from Chutz La'aretz, the actual like a clod of earth, etc., as being tamei with tumas meis. So again, the Nazir goes to Chutz La'aretz, has to pause his clock, become tahor, and then resume afterwards. The reason why is because it's only derabbanan. Now, here you might ask, didn't we learn back in the third parak that a nazir who starts his nazirus in Chutz La'aretz, he has to restart the whole thing from the beginning when he comes there at Yisrael? The answer is yes, that's how the rabbi set it up. But our case here in our Mishnah is where he started in Eretz Yisrael, and then he ended up going to Chutz La'aretz temporarily. So the time in Chutz La'aretz pauses his nazirus count, but when he returns to Eretz Yisrael and becomes tahor again, he can resume where he left off. The next cases are the Golil and the Dofek. So the Golil and Dofek, their exact definition is the subject of various shitas in the Rishonim. These are parts of a burial container or burial chamber, not the grave itself necessarily, but the cover of the grave or the thing that seals off the entrance to the grave and so on. So these things have a tumah status all their own. And this is actually a Doraisa. The Golil and Dofek, the grave seals, let's call them, and containers, they are tamei midoraisa. That's true whatever they're made of, even if they're made of stone or something. And if a person touches the Golil or Dofek, he becomes tamei midoraisa through tumas meis and has to do a 7-day count and so on. And that's true for Nazir as well. But since the Golil and Dofek are parts of the grave and not part of the corpse itself, so the rule is that even though they become tamei midoraisa now, as a nazir who was exposed to touching or being on the same ol as a gol or dofek, he only, again, pauses in his nazir's count and resumes once he becomes tahor. Next is urevius dam, a quarter of a lug of blood, called 125 cc, give or take, half a cup. So if this is blood coming from a dead person, so then it also conveys tumah through Ohel, Maga, and Masa. Nevertheless, even though a person who is under the same roof or touches a revius of blood from a dead person does become Tamei Midoraisa, there's a Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, a tradition that goes all the way back, that if a Nazir gets exposed to such blood and it's only a revius's mount, meaning less than a half of a revius is a quarter of a lug. So in the previous Mishnah, at half a lug, he now has to restart his clock. But if it's more than a quarter and less than a half, a quarter or more and less than a half of a lug, so then he becomes tamei midoraisa, requires the full purification process. His days of nazirus are put on hold. But when he becomes tahor again, the lach l'moshe misinai is he can resume his nazirus count. Next is the way the bartender learns the next three words. They're one case. V'ohel v'rova atzamos. It's a little strange to read these words if it's one case, but in any case, the bartender learns. We're talking here about a rova atzamos. A rova here is not a revius of blood, which is a quarter of a lug, which is like say 125 cc, but rather a rova, a quarter of a kav. A kav is roughly 2 liters, so rova kav 500 cc, roughly. And we're saying here, if there's a container that contains a rova of a kav, 500 cc roughly, of bones, even bone fragments, even bones, and none of them are even the size of a saora, it doesn't matter, of a barley corn. The point is, if the bones are, the total volume of the bones adds up to a rova of a kav, so that bone source is a source of tumah. And if a person specifically has tumah exposure via ohel, and he's over the bones, they're over him, or he's under the same roof as those bones, so then midoraisa, he's tamei, tumas meis. But if there's less than a half a kav of bones, and it's ohel specifically, so then he, as a nazir, doesn't reset his clock. He just becomes tamei, and then when he becomes tahor, he can resume his count. So the point here, according to the bartender, is it says v'ohel v'rova atamos, because we're talking specifically about ohel, meaning if he would do masa, for example, or maga, he would lift up the cup that contains all these bone fragments, so he would become tamei and restart his clock. But if it's just ohel, then not. The Rambam learns, by the way, that the ohel is a different case. It's referring to an ohel that's made of linen, where the rule is that it also becomes tame. That's a separate din unto itself. But if a person touches that linen overhang over a mace, like the linen tarp or something, so he doesn't reset his clock. Okay. Next is v'chelim hanogim b'mace. If you have utensils that are touching a corpse. So this is really based out of a pasuk. The pasuk which says v'chol asher yiga al pnei hasada b'chalal cherev, referring to a corpse, where in the corpse there is a cherev, is like a sword inside the corpse. So it says yitame shivas yamim, it's tame for 7 days by exposure to the knife itself. Chazal darshan out that the cherev hu k'chalal, the sword that's, or knife, whatever it is, that's inside of the corpse, has the same status as the corpse itself, meaning it conveys tumah for 7 days, or tumah's mace. So the point is, although a person who touches like such a sword that's inside a corpse becomes tummy for 7 days and requires the full tahara process, because he's tumah mace midah oraisa, still, as a nazir, his clock doesn't reset, no korbanos required, no haircut required, and the reason is because, again, it's not a corpse itself, but rather just a, I don't know, 1 degree removed of the corpse, and therefore it doesn't reset his clock. That's the din. There's a big machlokas Rishonim, exactly what kinds of kalim this applies to. According to many Rishonim, what's referred to as Shitas Rabbeinu Tam, it applies specifically to metal implements only, mateches, but not, say, wood. Whereas many other Rishonim, what's called the Rambam Shita, understand it's all what's called Kli Shetef, any utensil other than an earthenware utensil that's touching a corpse. So that'd be true for, let's say, Beget clothing that he's wearing, a burial shrouds and so on. Whatever's touching the corpse also conveys him like the corpse itself, and that's the Rambam Shita. In any case, if the nose is exposed to these things, he doesn't reset his clock. Next, now this is a little strange. We now are lapsing into a whole different thing, not of Tumas Mace per se, but rather of a Mitzora who's Tameh. So the Mitzora is the person who has these skin afflictions, Tzara'as. So here's how it works, to keep it simple. The Mitzora wakes up one day, he discovers he's got these white things on, white, you know, skin discolorations. He has to show it specifically to a Kohen, not a rabbi, but a Kohen per se. The Kohen looks at it, and then the Kohen will basically say either one of three things. The first is, this is nothing. These are freckles. I don't know what, you know, it's psoriasis. The second thing is, this is definitely a nega. It's a proper tzaras, and you're confirmed, mukhlat, you're confirmed as a mitzora. And you have to now be totally tummy and wait till this resolves itself. Or he can say, I'm not sure. We have to wait and see. It depends on what happens next. It doesn't have exactly the signs that confirm it to be tahor or tummy. You're put in sequestration, hezger, for 7 days, after which you come back to me, and then we'll look and we'll see, have they grown, have certain hairs grown, and so on, that will indicate that is a source of tumor, or is it shrinking, in which it's not, and so on. So that's hezger. And then, at the end of the process, the mukhlat will be confirmed to be, if he's confirmed to be a mitzora, that persists sort of indefinitely until the negayim, these afflictions, sort of resolve themselves by having signs of tahara, and at which point he goes back to the Kohen, and the Kohen says, yes, you know, your tzaras is coming to an end. And then there's another 7-day process. In the beginning, he has to cut his hair, and he has to become tahor through a process with some birds, and okay, whatever the process is, to become tahor. He counts 7 more days. He may suffer 7 days of counting, at the end of which he shaves his body for a second time. We're talking about the entire body, not just the hair on his head like the Nazir does. The Mitzorah cuts all of the hair on his body. And then he brings, then there's korbanos to bring, and then he's totally tahor, the Mitzorah. So here our Mishnah says, Yemei Safro v'yemei Gamro. Yemei Safro are those last 7 days where he's between the two haircuts, and he's waiting, counting 7 days before he can complete his tara. So in that day, those times, he is still tame. His tumah is a lesser tumah. It's a tumah that only, he only conveys tumah by maga, direct contact with him. But the point is, while Yemei Safro are persisting, those 7 days, he still cannot let the clock is not ticking for his nazir's commitment. And Yemei Gamro, these are the days when he's confirmed as a Mitzorah, so he's totally Tameh. A Mitzorah is pretty much the most potent source of Tumah in the Torah outside of an Avi Avos, outside of what we're talking about here, corpse Tumah. So he conveys Tumah through all Maga, Masa, Heset, Midras, Bia, all sorts of things. And the point is, while he's Tameh as a Mukhlat, as a confirmed Mitzorah, again, the clock isn't running, but when he resolves it ultimately, then he can resume where he left off. So al elu ein hanazir megaleach, on all the items of our list for the whole Mishnah, they do not require the nazir to cut his hair and start again. Umaza b'shlishu v'shvi, and he'll just require the normal purification process of being sprinkled with the paradum water, the mechatas, on day 3 and day 7. That, by the way, does not apply to the Metzora. The Metzora and his the Yimei Sofra and the Mei Gomro have nothing to do with this. They don't need paradum water at all. Veino soser es hakodmim, and the days in which he's tamei by whatever we have in the Mishnah up to now, they don't destroy what was counted up to now. Umas chil umona miyad, as soon as he finishes becoming tahor from whatever exposure he had in the Mishnah, we list those items. So after that, he then resumes his nazirus immediately and picks up where he left off, counting the rest of the days that he's required to do. Ukorban einlo, and there's no requirement for him to bring the korban. There's no, like, you know, asham or something like that for exposure to these kinds of tumah. Be'emes amru. Now the truth is, when it says the be'emes amru, literally translates as "and the truth is they say." Be'emes amru, according to most rishonim, means like a incontrovertible fact, as if it were like halacha moshe Sinai. There's no denying it. The Rambam learns it actually is halacha moshe Sinai per se. Whatever the case is, the deal is that yemei hazava hazava v'yemei hezgero shel metzora, the days in which a person is tamei as a zav or a zava. The zav has mysterious emissions coming out of him for 2 or 3 times, whatever, and the zava also, she's bleeding outside of her normal menstrual cycle for 3 days. Okay, whatever the story is, those people are tamei. But nothing to do with Naziris, they're just tamei in their own right. And also, yumei hesgero shel metzora, the days of hesger, of sequestration, where we're waiting to see what happens with this metzora, those 7 days, hare elu olin lo, those, even though the person as a zav zava or a musgar metzora, the person's tamei, nevertheless, hare olin lo, those, he's tamei, but those days count towards his total count for Naziris, the Naziris commitment. So he's tummy, but he still can't cut his hair, drink wine, and so on, and the days keep on counting towards his Naziris commitment. If you'll ask why in the world we included the Metzora before Yimei Safra, Yimei Gomro, the answer, because they're not Tumas Mace at all. While that's true, the Gemara learns at a Kol V'chomer that Yimei Safra and Yimei Gomro should be times in which the clock is put on pause for Nazir, and that being the case, because that limit of the Kol V'chomer, so it is included in the Mishnah as one of the items which pauses the clock as well.